Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
There's been this really strange reaction among some folks in New England to the signing of Cam Newton. Like, you would think that Pat's fan would be partying. Because about a week back, to me, they look like they had no shot. They look like they were tanking on the season to maybe possibly take a shot at moving up and getting their next franchise quarterback. Like, I know this. A week ago, they were not a playoff team. A week ago, the Patriots really were not worth our time or our effort. They just weren't. And then they bring in a former MVP, and they get this former MVP for next to nothing. Suddenly, the Patriots are once again interesting as hell. Suddenly, they matter once again. Like, how in the hell is that not a great thing? What is there not to like about that? Well, apparently, quite a bit. Starting with Cam Newton's sense of fashion. And then moving on to Cam Newton and how he celebrates big plays. And it didn't take long before there was grumbling and muttering that there's no way that he will understand the Patriot way and he will not fit into their culture. You know, that those two things are not going to mix. And that he better change if he wants to be a Patriot, and he probably won't. And then you knew it was only a matter of time before it came out. But out came the word showboat. You know, like his personality is just too big to fit in Foxborough. Excuse me. Rob Gronkowski?
Roger that.
Gronk? There is no bigger, louder, more outlandish personality in the NFL, and maybe in all of sports, than Big Gronk. And by the way, he seemed to fit in pretty well in New England. That seemed right. That seemed to work out just fine in New England. Yeah, but then again, as we know, when it comes to celebrations, Gronk, whenever Gronk scored a TD, he'd just go all Barry Sanders with it and just hand the ball right to the ref. Yeah, of course he didn't. My man would try to spike the ball into the center of the earth. So don't come in here and say that Gronk is different, but the rest of the Patriots don't showboat. Yet different? Different like Stephen Ridley doing that kick down the door celebration after a TD. Yeah, but maybe the issue is with a quarterback who celebrates and yells on the field. Maybe that's the problem. You can't have your quarterback doing it. Yeah, maybe you're larger than life tight end. Maybe another skill guy, but you can't have your quarterback celebrating anything. You can't have your quarterback yelling about anything. It's not like the previous quarterback in New England ever ran onto the field and then just let it go.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the...
Let's go! Let's go, man!
Oh, yeah, that's
go!
Right.
Let's go, man!
That's right. The previous quarterback did do that. That's right. The previous quarterback did get on the field and yell. And that previous quarterback sure as hell did celebrate on the field. Like, nobody could celebrate a first down like Tom Brady by giving that first down signal. Yeah, and Brady did enjoy a Gronk spike now and then. So what is it about Cam then? You know, is it that he's too active on social media? Is that the anti-Patriot way? Is that another reason why he's not going to fit in with their culture? Is that why folks in New England are complaining about Newton and saying it won't work because of the way he handles his social media? If only he followed the Patriot way and the Patriot playbook for handling social media, you know, by constantly posting tired videos and unfunny jokes and relentlessly banging the hashtag LFG the way Brady did. Or maybe you'd prefer if Cam were running a t-shirt company with his social media the way Julian Edelman does, peddling $30 tees. Maybe that'd be better. So what is it then about this guy? Why is he not going to fit in? Why does it not make sense? Because he wears different outfits to press conferences? Like, who cares? The hell does that even matter? How the hell does that have anything to do with how this guy shows up on the field? I can answer that for you. It doesn't. And why don't we talk about the celebrations, the TD celebrations for a minute? Those celebrations They're just so terrible for everybody, especially for kids. Man, they set a bad example for kids, don't they? Cam celebrating TDs sets a bad example for kids. Yeah, but have you actually seen what he does? Yeah, there's a dance, there is that, and a Superman. And then that part where he routinely hands the ball to a kid in the stands after he scores. So get the hell out of here with that notion that celebrating is a bad thing, or that it's going to wreck the Patriots, or that it proves that he's about the wrong things. The guy just signed a crazy low contract. He's guaranteed less than $600,000. It is a prove-it deal, like the ultimate prove-it deal. That shows that he's not about the wrong things. It shows that he's about the right things. Like, never mind the celebrations. If you're a Patriots fan and you see that, you should be celebrating. You should be celebrating your ass off. And you should be going even harder after he posted about that contract on Instagram. This is the message from Newton. And again, this is your so-called bad guy. Your so-called selfish guy. Your so-called only about himself guy. The guy that is about all the wrong things. Check out this message. Quote, "It's not a lot of things money cannot buy, but amongst the top of that list of things, you would find respect as one of those. This is not about money for me. It's about respect. Hashtag, all I know is work. Hashtag, I'm betting it all on me. Hashtag, shine through the shade. Hashtag, not for likes, just for life. One love," end quote. Yeah, that dude. Yeah, that dude and that attitude is going to wreck your locker room or be a threat to the team's culture and chemistry. Yeah, and how about that crappy argument that it's going to change the culture? Last I checked, Bill Belichick was responsible for the culture. Bill Belichick is the one who brought in Cam Newton. Bill Belichick is the one who wants Cam Newton. You know, for all you Patriot fans, they're like, that you believe in Bill no matter what. This is all Bill. Newton didn't put a gun to the Patriots' head. They didn't force, or he didn't force the Patriots to sign him. They brought him in. They know how he's going to fit in with their culture. And one more thing, the guy couldn't be any more motivated than he is, and he's practically playing for free. How are you anything but hyped if you're a Patriots fan? If this guy comes in and he's the starter, you've got a starting quarterback almost for nothing. And if he doesn't win that job, you really haven't lost anything at all. You still have your hero Stiddy. It's the ultimate win-win. So not only is it not a bad idea, it's a pretty damn good idea. And it's got the potential to be one of the best ideas in recent memory. And no, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what he's like physically right now. I don't know how his foot is. I don't know how his shoulder is. But if they're anything near 100%, look the hell out. Because when this guy is right, there's nobody like him. And no, I'm not saying you have to like Cam Newton. He's not for everybody. But if you're going to dislike this guy, at least be honest about why you dislike this guy and don't make up reasons to justify it. Because when you do that, you embarrass yourself and everybody around you. You're just telling on yourself. Because the truth is, all those things that you dislike about him, you probably love about somebody else. Drew Tranquil is my guest. Drew, it's great to have you back. Now, Drew, you and I talked before the draft last year, and so much has changed since last April. Before I get into that, how are you and everybody around you doing during this most unusual time?
Hey, Jim. First off, thanks for having me on. You know, my family and I were doing well. My son actually just turned 1 year old, and we were able to celebrate him a little bit. We're back home in Fort Wayne, Indiana, visiting some family here for the 4th before, you know, I get back out there to Southern California and really lock it in here to prepare for training camp. But I appreciate you asking. We're doing well. How about yourself?
Really good, Drew. Thanks for asking. We're doing great. The family's great. Everybody's good. All right, so listen up for a minute. Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want to make sure that what you're listening to is what you're listening to and not what your neighbor or children or a significant other is listening to. You feel me? Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you go dropping hundreds on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. They're amazing. Now, you already know that Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds on the market. But they sound just as amazing as the other top brands that you know of. And they've got a new model. Their newest model is the Everyday E25 earbuds. They're the best ones to date. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design, which gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. And to me, that's everything. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, they're perfect for conference calls or binging podcasts like this. And unlike some other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet. No dangling wires or stems to distract anybody during video calls. Get the latest and greatest from Raycon and get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Rome. Buyraycon.com/ROME for 15% off. Raycon wireless earbuds by Raycon.com/Rome. I want to ask you what that first year was like as a father.
It was a huge learning experience. My wife and I actually, when we got the news that we were being drafted out to Orange County, we moved out there. She was 38 weeks pregnant, so there were a lot of uncertainties. And you know, our family's primarily focused here in the Midwest, and we've got a few family members in Alabama, but nobody out on the West Coast. So we were out there, felt like we were up the creek without a paddle a little bit, but, you know, we learned and we made do and kind of came together, but it was a huge learning experience. But he's a total joy, I'm sure. I don't know if you have any kids yourself, but, learning experience, but he's awesome for sure.
You know, I do. I've got two sons, Drew. I've got one who started in college at Wisconsin this past fall, and I've got another one that just started high school. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And it goes fast, not to be so cliche, but that clock spins so quickly. I remember what it was mm-hmm. like when we got our first home. It is scary and it's different, but it's awesome. Now, I mentioned there's mm-hmm. a lot that I want to talk to you about, including your great rookie season and getting ready for mm-hmm. year two. But before we get to that, you are hosting a three-part interview series called Hear Me Out. How did that come to be, and why was that something you wanted to pursue?
You know, I just felt like, you know, there's defining moments in our history. If you look back, and it seemed like, you know, 2020 has just been a tough year for everybody. If you just look back at everything that's taken place, I think it speaks for itself, but it really felt something I've been passionate about my entire life is justice and justice reform. And it felt like to me, you know, we had come to another junction point of the fight for equality in America. And I certainly didn't want to miss the moment. And it seemed like conversations were happening. And, you know, my inspirations and hope for the three-part series is kind of self-explanatory, just to hear each other out. You know, I believe empathy is the key ingredient and the engine that can move about change and stir about change in people's hearts. And so I was like, shoot, if we can just learn to, you know, be less quick to give our opinion and maybe more quick to listen to the pain in others' voice, even if, you know, that's something we haven't experienced before in our life, then, you know, I'll take the time to bring on friends of mine to share their perspectives. And so hopefully, you know, whatever my sphere of influence is, it's empowering and encouraging, you know, conversations to happen at the community level. And I think that was really the idea behind doing it.
Good for you. Drew Tranquil is joining us. You mentioned bringing your friends on. The first guest on your show is Jalen Smith, and the mm-hmm. topic is the role of racial education in racial reconciliation. You know, one of your first questions to Jalen was to ask him where his head is at right now and what's on his mind mm-hmm. these days. Let me turn that back on you. What's on your mind over the last few weeks in the wake of the killing of George Floyd?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, my wife and I, and she can attest to this, it's been really burdensome to us. It's been, you know, the topic really of conversation in our home, you know, over the course of the last month, and specifically, you know, how have we, you know, perpetuated this problem or, you know, maybe made our friends experience here in America, you know, not as well as ours, whether that's through our silence or through not speaking up and in inopportune times. And so, it's something that's just been heavy on my heart. And so I've been reaching out, you know, to close friends of mine. And I think that's a big point to think about is, you know, you don't have to reach out to famous people or people of high influence to make a change. Really, it can start at your community level and the friends that are in your school and the friends that are on your team, that are in, you know, the band with you or whatever, you know, sphere that you're in, you know, doing. You know, those conversations can take place there, and hopefully that's what it's doing. And So my heart and, you know, head right now is just how can we continue the conversation? Because it would be a shame to me if we had such an opportune time. And certainly it's in the wake of tragic, you know, deaths. And we don't need to lose sight of that. And we need to continue to mourn and support those families. But, you know, moments like these have certainly led to change here in America and worldwide. And it would be, you know, a shame if we missed the moment here, Jim.
All right. So who do you have on upcoming episodes, Drew? And what's the best way for people to find the conversations?
Yeah, so our next episode is going to be starring Corey Robinson. And, you know, Corey is somebody who the resume speaks for itself, but he was first and foremost just a teammate of mine and a good friend at Notre Dame. You know, a guy who potentially, you know, there was talk about him being a first, second round draft pick, and he chose to stop playing football for, you know, sports related injury reasons and ended up pursuing art. And now he's a, you know, TV sports broadcaster with NBC. And so just somebody who's very, very intelligent and very, very well-spoken and well thought out. And he'll be part two of the series. And then lastly is just a mentor of mine growing up. His name's Michael Lito, founder and CEO of Rise Sports Advisors. And, you know, has just meant a lot to me. And so another close friend of mine, mentor of mine, and he'll be sharing in part three of the series. And, you know, you can find the series available on all the platforms, IG, Twitter, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. So anywhere where you can possibly think to stream videos, they'll be available. And you can certainly listen in and hear the awesome perspectives and points of views that these young men have towards the road to racial reconciliation here in America.
Good stuff, Drew. Drew Tranquil joining us. Now, before I let you go, it seemed like last season, as it wore on, your role kept getting bigger and bigger. The team kept giving you more and more opportunities and more responsibilities. So how do you explain your ability to show up in your first season when the game is supposed to be too fast and you're supposed to need time to adjust from college to the NFL, yet you've already established yourself as somebody who could play in the NFL at the top level at multiple positions? How were you able to accelerate that learning curve?
Well, I was fortunate to have guys who had experienced it in Thomas Davis, Denzel Perryman, you know, Jatavius Brown. We had guys in our locker room, and I specifically point to Thomas Davis, who, you know, is entering his 17th season now, and guys who had just done it, and they taught me early on how to establish a routine and get my body ready to peak on Sundays and be ready to perform, not only physically, but, you know, mentally, and have the capabilities to be prepared for what I might, you know, face on a given Sunday. And, you know, I really have to credit that to their leadership and then my ability to, you know, have the discipline to implement that routine and execute on it on a day-to-day basis. But it really came down to just, you know, trusting my training and trusting the road that has gotten me to where I, you know, am today. And I credit that to my faith. I credit that to, you know, just the discipline of day in and day out and hard work and being coachable and listening and looking to the leadership that has gone before you and then acting and being a leader yourself. And so there were a lot of key ingredients I think went to it, but, you know, certainly we didn't have the season we wanted to, and hopefully, you know, we can rebound this year and have a stronger season as a team.
You know, before I let you go, speaking of discipline, you were recently tweeting pics of what you eat in a day. It's pretty clear you're a very clean eater. You're going for premium fuel. For those who do not know, what's a normal day of eating like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I try to eat as clean as I can so that I can, you know, perform to the best of my abilities. And I'm certainly looking for competitive advantages wherever I can. You know, I gotta tell you, Jim, my go-to in the morning is this recipe my wife and I have coined, and specifically she coined as protein pancakes. And they just consist of egg whites, oats, and a banana. And they're actually really delicious. You throw a little bit of peanut butter and some sugar-free syrup on there and you're rolling. After that, I typically do, you know, a shake after my workouts, and, you know, lunch and an afternoon snack and dinner. And depending on, you know, what my activity level was during the day, sometimes I sneak in, you know, an extra meal after dinner before bed. But typically it's just my standard bowl of Kashi cereal with my almond and cashew milk, which I love too. So, you know, it's pretty regimented. People think, you know, physically training is one of the more difficult things to be a professional athlete, but the nutritional side of things and the consistency of it and trying to stay regimented is very, very difficult when you look at the food prep, the time it takes to make the meals and consume them. And it can be a very time consuming part of your day for sure.
Oh, 100%. That's why I asked the question. And I know that protein pancake. We do that in my family. So I know exactly what you're
really?
Talking about. Yes.
That's too cool.
Same thing. I love them. I know exactly what you're talking about. One last thing. In terms of regimentation, before the draft, you and I talked about cold showers. Still one of my favorite topics. Are you still doing them? And do you find them as valuable as you did?
I do. I do cold showers. I'll typically do some type of cold water therapy, whether it's a cold shower, whether I have a chance to make it out in the ocean and catch some waves. And so if I get a surfing session in, or if I get out in the waves, typically I'll reward myself with a warm shower at night. But if I don't have the opportunity to make it out either in the cold tub or the ocean, I'll discipline myself with some cold shower. So I still love that cold water routine for sure.
I was going to say, Drew, is it to reduce inflammation, or is it for mental toughness, or both?
I think it's certainly a combination. I think at first it's obviously to reduce inflammation, but there's also a mental toughness component when you look at just the discipline to actually engage and do it on a daily basis. It's certainly something that's not comfortable, and we talk about all the time in our locker room with Coach Gus Bradley. He says, you know, when you're uncomfortable and you have great spirit, it can lead to great growth. And so just try to do it day in and day out, and hopefully over the long haul it leads to good results.
That's a great line. And now we're all caught up. He's a linebacker for the LA Chargers, their second leading tackler with 75 tackles. I would encourage you to check out his three-part interview series, Hear Me Out, on all the social media platforms. Drew, great to get caught up. Much respect to you, and it's always good to have you on this show.
Yeah, Jim, it's always great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
The eight-day saga of smoking Jay Cutler, hunting for the serial killer who was savagely ripping off the heads of his chickens and spraying feathers all over his yard. And I started working this beat over a week ago. And by working that beat, I mean owning the ever-living hell out of that beat. There's no other single media source in this country that was more firmly entrenched than yours truly in the day-to-day war of Cuddy v. the culprit. Cuddy v. the chicken killer. Cuddy v. Cuddy, really. Cuddy v. himself. Because Cuddy was his own worst enemy. All the way up until that final day when he finally fastened a chair to a tree and took matters into his own hands. Truth be told, the end of the saga deserved a much better tribute than what we rolled out with on Wednesday. I'll admit that. Except Wednesday was more about tying a bow on the end of that saga. It wasn't about the retrospective. It wasn't about looking back. It was more about closure, more about putting some punctuation onto the most gripping and entertaining story of 2020. And that's what we did. But I've had a couple of days to think about it. 48 hours have now since passed. So I want you to sit back, turn up the TV and the radio for three golden moments so you can appreciate how epic this entire thing was. Because I will remember the hunt. But will the hunt remember me?
I will remember you.
We've got a chicken serial killer on the loose. We've lost quite a few. Tonight we're going to set up a trail camera, see if it's a coyote, bobcat, raccoon, could be anything.
That is the content that I'm here for. He said it might be a bobcat, it might be a coyote, but he also did not rule out a possible inside job.
Thumb over there while she looks nice and sweet. She's a savage with loose morals.
Cuddy apparently had a chicken guy.
A chicken guy, Blake. Drop me off some more chickens. Big night, huh, ladies?
Back at it this morning to bring everybody back up to speed.
No pictures on the cam, as expected. We're obviously dealing with a pretty intelligent predator.
Enter day two of the manhunt.
Obviously, things have escalated. Back up is me and Mark, my neighbor. We got some night vision goggles from our buddy.
Here is his latest post from this morning.
No culprit last night. Hopefully I can get a nap in at some point and get ready for tonight because he's out there somewhere.
Would Detective Cuddy and the hunt for the chicken killers jump the weekend? Yes.
We're obviously under attack. Front yard, backyard, daylight, nighttime, morning. We gotta stop the bleeding somehow. We're gonna go with some live cages tonight, see if we can't trap something. Probably have to go night vision in the front. It's just, we've lost control completely, and somehow we've got to regain it.
So now we're on day four of the manhunt. And Cuddy is getting work so badly.
The culprit's been 3 to 4 steps ahead of me.
He walked around to his front yard, and he saw what looked like a pillow factory explosion. Feathers freaking everywhere.
I talked to my buddy Ray at Binks Lodge. He told me peanut butter in the cage works every time. So that's what we're going with. But I also don't know if Ray knows what he's talking about. So I put chicken in there and a marshmallow and tuna.
Here's your problem, Jay. You think you're smarter than Ray at Binks Lodge. Cuddy, you're not. You're not even smarter than whatever is grubbing on your chickens and making you look like a fool. So maybe you listen to Ray at Binks, eh, Cuddy?
About to go downstairs, make a coffee, and then I'm going to climb up in the stand and see what happens. Night vision, whole deal. So not really looking forward to it. Enough's enough. One long night's going to be better than fighting this thing for the next three. So once I get up there, we'll see what happens. Stay tuned. This saga honestly doesn't want to end.
Chicken heads were ripped off. Bodies were left in the chicken yard. Gruesome stuff. The ladies are now safe and sound. We can all sleep well for a few nights. Let me translate that for you.
We got him.
We got him. Cuddy got him. 8 days later, and apparently the war is over. Smokin' Jay Cutler has won, and he is coming home. Man, I gotta tell you, that was more emotional than I thought. That was heavier than I thought. 8 incredible days on that beat. Not only was that story ripe with plot twists and intrigue, but it was almost too perfectly timed to be real. Think about this. I'm now a few hours away from having 384 hours off. A half a day away from 16 days out of the box. So the fact that this thing wrapped up in time for me to bring it to its radio and TV conclusion was a gift. A gift from the content gods. Almost too good to be true. Do you know how pissed I would have been if I left that beat while it was still going on, only to have it wrap up while I was in Northern Scania? Luckily, that did not happen. Wait, what? Dateline, Nashville, Tennessee. Jay Cutler's nightmare becomes reality at 12:33 a.m. local time this morning. Cuddy's night vision cameras capture the most crystal clear, most daunting, ominous, and downright terrifying photo I have ever seen. A raccoon in full stride, eyes glowing with blinding revenge, heading straight for the chicken coop. Holy hell. Cuddy, the Hunter, season 2 is already here. Hell yes.
Hell yes.
But wait. I'm in Wisco, rainy Wisco, for the next 2 weeks. Hell no.
Hell
no.
2 weeks.
Man. Hey, listen, I'm going to deal with my bitter disappointment in just 1 second. But first, the caption from Cuddy. Cuddy writes, quote, "Come on, raccoons. While I respect the family bond and your desire for revenge, this isn't the fight you want. Go pick on the squirrels and the chipmunks in your little forest." End quote. Oh, hell yes. It's freaking go time. Quote, "This isn't a fight you want." Right. It's not a fight they want. It's a fight we all want. Jay Cutler just got down from that tree stand and immediately has to climb right back up because, like he and so many other people have said, raccoons never act alone. And when Dad did not come back with dinner the other night, here comes Mama, or whoever the hell, to settle the score. Maybe his first son. No words on if that raccoon did any damage last night. I'm imagining that Cuddy's pretty sick of updating how many chickens he's lost. And who knows if Blake, the chicken dude, can keep up with the amount of restocking he's had to do in the past 10 days. But man, it is freaking on. Yet again, Cuddy, Hunter Season 2 is here already. I might be in Wisco for the second war, but as long as I don't dunk my blower into Cranberry Lake again. I am about to be glued. So here's to Jay Cutler, sitting under the glowing light of fireworks in the night sky, lighting one marb red off the next, guarding his ladies again. We thought it was over. We thought wrong. And I have never been so happy to be so wrong. Let's get it on. He is Tom Izzo. Tom, it is so good to have you back. Before we get into everything, Tom, how are you and everybody around you doing during this most unusual time?
Well, we're doing pretty good, Jim. And boy, with an introduction like that, I might fly you in definitely for my funeral someday. I kind of like the way you went about it. But the Big Ten coach of the decade, I think I'm the only guy that lasted the decade. That's the problem. So I'm not sure it's as worthy. I think Bo and John Beilein, those guys only went 7 or 8 years, but it was good anyway, and we're doing good. You know, the family, we've had our kids back for a couple weeks, and it's gone okay, but I have mixed feelings on this whole thing, and I'm sure you do at times, but glad you're still working and keeping us occupied during the day.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, Tom. I do have mixed feelings, and it's a very challenging time. It's a really difficult time, and we will get into some of that. Now, in terms of you being the Big Ten coach of the decade for the 2010s, listen, I know you're going to say it's about the players, but that is a great, great honor. What's it mean to you? What's it represent to you?
Well, I said when I got the job, you know, at year four, we were in the Final Four. Year five, we won it, and then year six, we were in it, and everybody wanted to canonize everything, and I said, you know, it's great, but I think the biggest, the most success you can have is when you have consistency. And, you know, the 22 straight NCAA tournaments, the 8 Final Fours, going to one every 3 years. And then over a decade, you know, I think we went to 3 or 4 Final Fours in that time. And I think that's what I'm most proud of, you know, that we've been able to maintain some order of consistency, not always winning it, not always getting there, but most of the time, at least knocking on the door in the last 2 weeks. And I think that's what it takes to be a great program. You know, you always got to be knocking on the door at the beginning, and you always got to be knocking at the door in the end. And sometimes in the middle, a lot of things happen.
Michigan State head basketball coach Tom Izzo breaking it down for us. All right, so you released a really powerful statement, I thought, earlier this week about the thoughts and conversations that you have had since the murder of George Floyd. It's important to note, Tom, this was not just some simple, easy statement. It was challenging, and you really got to the heart of the issues. What inspired you to take that approach?
You know, Jim, it's been an interesting thing for me. I grew up in the UP, you know, with my buddy Mariucci, which is like Lily White America. The first black man I ever met was my assistant coach right now, Mike Garland, and that was the first night I got to college. So I was 20 or 18 years old. And so I come from a different area. Then I come down here, downstate, and pick a profession where 80% of the kids I recruit are African American. And then I top that off by marrying an Hispanic woman. So I kind of felt like I've heard all the stories. I've watched what my wife and her family's gone through. Mike Garland has been a great mentor of mine. And then I've been lucky, you know, with Magic and Steve Smith and Gregory Kelser and Mateen Cleaves and all those guys, even from past years, I utilized them a lot during that time to try to figure out, you know, what is right, what is wrong. And I say this, I mean, I still believe this. I think it was Mike Garland that said, you know, our job is to treat everybody equal and everybody the same, but our other job is to hold everybody accountable. And that's one thing I'm a little frustrated with too. You know, I mean, whether there's a lot of good cops, Jim, you know, a lot, I know a lot, you know, but when you see a police officer that's been reprimanded 18 times and still has a job, I guarantee you this, in your job, if you made 18 different mistakes that were of consequence, I bet you wouldn't have your job. I know I wouldn't have mine. And I think sometimes, as the police officer from Minnesota said, or the chief, you know, we're finding a way that we have to harbor these guys. And I don't think that's good either. So I'm still going with treat everybody like you'd want to be treated. But there's got to be some accountability. Like, I believe in the protests. I'm not crazy about the rioting and the burning, because I think it leaves a standard forever. And I know that happened in Detroit. I mean, it was back in the late 60s. I was in junior high school. And, you know, some of those buildings are still charred and burned and everything. So, you know, finding a happy medium is what we got to do. But I do think what impressed me most, Jim, was seeing the number of people in the calm protests that were marching. You know, there were whites and blacks and Hispanics and just about every young and old. And I felt a different vibe than I felt the other times. And I'm hoping this is the time that we can all be Americans instead of all being part of different Americans.
Tom Izzo is joining us. Tom, you and I could talk about this very topic for hours. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Let me ask you quickly about your team, because you and I spoke a couple of times during the past season, and we talked about how challenging it had been for Cassius Winston, his family, and your team. Yet somehow through everything, you guys find a way to win a third straight Big Ten title. What's it say about the guys you have in that locker room?
Well, I think it says a lot about the culture that maybe we've developed, that the Cleaves has developed way back, and now it's been continued through Draymond's and Valentine's and Gary Harris's, and, you know, just the different guys in the whole 20 years since we won it. I think culture is something that scares me with the new transfer rules, if it goes through, and the way kids are just bolting. It's hard to develop a culture, and I think I've got a pretty good culture, and the culture, you know, what led us when we were struggling a little bit halfway through. I mean, Cash was really struggling as far as his points in that were good, but just mentally in the locker room, you know, I had a guy that, you know, brother committed suicide. And then in February, I had a player in Xavier Tillman whose wife had a baby. So you talk about an incredible swing of emotions. And once that happened, we started playing our best basketball. Cash has got a little better, and we were playing really good at the end, Jim. I thought we had a serious chance to make a run. And then, unfortunately, it was all cut short.
I thought you did too, Tom. I thought you were really playing really well at the right time. So when you have somebody like Cassius, and it's so tough on everybody, but I know how special that relationship is to you, and you know he's not going to get another chance to play in the NCAA tournament, what does that feel like?
That was the hardest day I've had in a long time. You know, we were practicing. We were getting ready to go to Indianapolis. We practiced in the morning. We were leaving at about 1 o'clock, and right at the end of practice, my Dobo came down and said, hey, they just took Michigan and Rutgers off the court. The tournament's over. And I had addressed my team, and then 4 hours later, I had addressed them that the NCAA tournament was over. And I took the seniors aside by myself, and then I took Cassius aside, and I just said, this is part of the adversity of life, you know, and you've been through a lot. You know, as a freshman, you didn't play much. In junior, senior year, you're, you know, player of the year candidate, and you've been through the you know, situation with your brother. You're still standing. You found a way. There's going to be bigger, tougher things you're going to have to deal with. But it was a sad day. It was a tear-jerking day, to say the least.
No doubt. Tom Izzo joining us. Yeah, Tom, I'm curious. The longer I'm in this, the more I think about this. But we had a kind of a chuckle at your resume at the top. But despite all that, that's only a short excerpt. I mean, I could have kept going and talked about some more of the accolades. But from where I'm sitting, you seem as hungry, as focused, as motivated as you've ever been. How do you explain that? And what keeps you working as hard as you do this far down the road?
You know, it's why you're good at what you do, my man, because you are right. I think what I did is, it's been 100 days now, just about 100 days or a little even longer since, you know, we kind of left the offices on, what was it, March 10th or something. And, you know, I went home. I learned to jump on a Peloton. I said, I'm going to get myself in the best shape of my life. I said, you know, that made me feel better, happier, my wife better. My wife's boyfriend wasn't happy because he knows I'm going to live an extra 10 years. But other than that, everybody else was happy and feeling good. I have kind of rejuvenated. You know, I say, you know, life brings a lot of things. I'm fortunate what I got. I work at a great place. I've been through a lot here in the last 3-4 years. But I think there's better times ahead, and I want to be now part of the solution. You know, now I've got a second championship to try to win. I've got players to try to get to the NBA, but maybe as important or more important, hopefully be part of a solution with a cultural issue that has been going on for years and years and years. So I'm kind of enjoying jumping in every week. We have a weekly meeting about it. I get some different video and show it outside because we're not allowed to be indoors with the players. And it's been pretty interesting.
Really interesting. Tom Izzo, my guest. I love that. Listen, one last thought. You mentioned, or we talked about, you being the coach of the decade. I know also on that day, Draymond Green, Denzel Valentine, and Cassius were all honored as well. How pleased were you for all of them?
I was excited. You know, I mean, it's great. You know, I mean, each one of them is completely different. You know, I look at Cash's personality and Draymond's, and they're different, and Valentine's kind of in between, but they're all guys that have given back a lot to me, to the program, and done a lot for me, and I love those guys, and that's what I said. You know, they built the culture. I just kind of managed it, but it's players that play the game, and it's players that that really do. You know, a coach has to give them direction, and that's what I think our job is now as we get through the pandemic, as we get through the social injustice. We got to give them direction, but eventually, you know, they got to do their job. And so my job is going to still be to hold them accountable, Jim, one way or another, hold them accountable. And yet most of them, 99% of them appreciate that once they're gone. So I'm going to keep working and hopefully get to be on your show more and more and more. I love it. I watch it, and I appreciate you, and I hope you and your family stay healthy during this time.
My man, as long as I have a show, you are one of the first guys I'll look for. He is the head basketball coach at Michigan State. He is a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. You as well, Tom. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Great to have you back. Thanks so much for that.
Thanks, Jimmy. Take care, man.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
That sounds pretty damn good. I am live. I am Jim Rome, and you are in the jungle. What's cracking? All right, so starting right here, one of the most New England Patriot days in recent memory. Patriots, got a Patriot.
Yeah!
Signing Cam Newton for walk-around money is the second most Patriots thing ever. The most Patriots thing ever is doing it on a day where they got slapped for cheating again. I love that move for him. I love that move for them. Why they were cheating, allegedly, with the Bengals, I will never know.
Come on, guys.
Dave Clawson is joining us.
Our ability to just lock ourselves in the film room is, I don't think, an option we have anymore. I need to listen. I need to learn. I've got to become a great advocate for you, but you guys got to help me do that.
My theory, Jeff from Richmond has been devouring Cuddy's chickens. Instead of cameras, may want to set up cranes on the property with nets the size of batting cages, strategically filling them with Big Macs.
Give it to him, flight deck. A golden ticket. Hey, James, if either you find that golden ticket or you crack open a mic and you sing him. Bob Melvin, good to talk to you. Stay safe.
You got it, Jim. Hey, you're a horse guy out here, right?
I am.
And I've been volunteering over at a place called Tierra Madre, which is a horse and human sanctuary. It is such a terrific place.
He is Tom Haberstroth.
I went back and put an asterisk on every championship. Every championship deserves an asterisk if you want to put one on 2020.
That's exactly what you think that is. Poulter hammering a biscuit. Remember when I said the gallery has not been that missed in golf? Well, they are now. To drown out Slappy Cheeks Poulter. Yeah, thanks, James.
J.R. Smith thought they had the lead.
How good of a dude.
He didn't know the score.
That LeBron would want him back.
That's a bad mistake by J.R. Smith.
After he cost him that game by not knowing the score.
I can't say I was sure of anything at that point.
That's how good of a dude J.R. Smith is. Ross Tucker is joining us.
What I'm about to say isn't really about just you or me. It's about America, Jim. Try to conjure up a situation in which yellow mustard is better than spicy mustard. I'll give you a hint. You can't. Like, who puts yellow mustard on a brat?
So forget about ripping beards off people's faces and making them eat it. Mike and Indy, I'm going to and make you eat it.
Sonny, I think you're done for a little while. And by a little while, I think I mean forever.
It is going to be 75 degree dew point.
Twitter. Good looking out. Rome isn't really used to 75 degree temps. Bella, bravo.
Degree dew point.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize
to absolutely everybody. I'm one of you, man. Pay taxes there, damn it.
I just don't get your vitriol towards Huey Lewis.
What's next? Huey Lewis and the News are better than the Beatles? Better than the Stones? Better than the Who?
I know you're telling people about the Who.
Take your little battle of Huey Lewis versus Styx. Fight that off in the corner, all right? Damn, Rit, this is your fault.
Game on.
Email.
Before Tiger says, not in my swing. You can hear Ian Poultry unloading a wet fart.
Not in my
swing. Not on my show, Drew. Five shows, 8 days later, apparently the war is over.
We did it!
Smoking Jay Cutler has won, and he is coming home. For now, if that raccoon has family members, then there will be a score to settle.
I'm kind of tired of hearing all these athletes complain about the bubble and this and that. Why? Because you're not going to get some tail for 3 months? Relax. You'll get over it. You'll get all the tail you want, especially if you win a ring at the end of the season.
Commercial sex purchaser and manipulating his genitals. If you aren't disputing the allegations, man, take a deal and walk. Put it all behind you.
For the love of God.
Put it behind all of us.
Please.
I can tell you what he's eating. HGH and donuts. That's added to his muscle, and he's ripping anal audio.
He ran down his diet. It did not include HGH or donuts or use of the word anal.
Jim, we all know these guys are going to punch the clown out there, but what we don't really know is who's going to punch it the most. I think the early favorite, I'm guessing, has to be JJ Red.
No, you did not just do that. Mercedes Lewis is my guest.
The road to success is always under construction. I just go out there and be me, man, and living my life like I'm on a one-day contract, boss.
The Hacksaw information. Did he really think his show was going to get syndicated over you?
I just really like the cut of your jib. You don't pull punches, but you elevate the conversation. You're smart, just funny as heck.
Drew Tranquil.
I do cold showers. I'll typically do some type of cold water therapy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the official, unofficial mayor of Huntington Beach.
Thanks, Jen Silk. It's 1-800-636-BRA. This is the new Jim Rome Show clone violations line.
What a difference then and now. Congratulations.
Wasn't Palm Olive or Cascade to blame for getting that thumb fillet?
Does that sound like Asia?
Maybe. I doubt it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Jim.
My tie's on the beach.
Love it.
It's all factories.
You're great.
I fly you in, definitely, from my funeral, so
hopefully we can speak again someday.
Northern Wisconsin. What is awaiting me when I arrive Saturday?
Good night!
Now, a lot to cover with Justin Holliday. Justin, really nice to have you on. You wrote a great piece in the Players Tribune earlier this week, but before we get to that, I want to ask you, how are you and everybody around you doing during this unusual time?
We're doing okay. We're doing well. Obviously, there's a lot of things to be thankful for, so, you know, that's how myself and my family live life. But I want to say appreciate you, you know, having me on. And, you know, we're doing well. I'm in shape, you know, getting ready to go play some basketball and, you know, stand up for, you know, what's right in this country.
All right. It's great to have you on. I appreciate you doing it. And I want to talk to you about playing basketball. And I want to talk to you about standing up for what is right in this country. In fact, in your piece, I want to read a quote. It's going to take me a minute to lay this out. But in your piece, okay, you write, quote, "I am a proud black man, a man who has been mistreated due to the color of his skin, yet I have also been blessed to have crushed the odds against reaching the pinnacle of my profession, and now I'm going to use my rights and unique platform to advocate for change. My open letter to the world is a public commitment to the work that you can expect from me, Justin Holliday," end of quote. So why was it important for you to make a public commitment to the work that you're going to do?
I mean, so, you know, one thing that I understand as being a basketball player and the responsibility I have, other than obviously putting the basketball in the hoop, is we are in a position to where people look up to us. And especially a lot of black people in our communities look up to us look up to us to stand up for what is right, look up to us as examples. And we have that responsibility regardless if we believe it or not. And so, you know, one thing in trying to make my decision if I wanted to come back and play or not, one thing that was important to me, regardless of what happened, was being in the position to make sure I was, one, showing and speaking up about what is wrong, but showing my people, you know, African-Americans, that you have somebody that is fighting for you. You have somebody that is considered to be successful in this world that is fighting for you. And it's not just, oh, you know, the people that are making the money, the athletes don't really care. You know, they're good anyway. They don't have to worry about this type of stuff. But we actually do, because we are black. But I wanted to give our people, you know, that encouragement that, you know, I will stand up and talk, and regardless of if I'm going to play basketball now or not, that's going to happen. And in going to play, one thing that, you know, I was worried about was going to play in basketball just making us forget about everything that's happened. And, you know, I feel like that shouldn't happen anymore. I mean, that should never happen in the past, and there were times when, you know, that obviously did. But my main goal is to make sure when I go and play that I'm speaking up about the things and how we're treated wrongly, you know, each day, and make sure that this uncomfortable feeling that everyone has – continues to happen.
We're talking to Justin Holliday. You also write, Justin, that in the past, when issues of social injustice would arise, you would pray. You would not go public with your thoughts and feelings. As you said, quote, "I was worried about speaking out and losing my job, but I fear that no more," end quote. What changed for you? Why do you no longer have that fear?
Well, I think then, you know, I guess the space I was in mentally was thinking, you know, I'm going to pray for these people that are in as position. And I don't say these people as in black people, but specifically whoever it was that, you know, the family and the person that the stuff happened to. And, you know, obviously pray that things, you know, that the family ends up being able to, you know, figure out what happened, if there's justice for the person that was killed. And then as well as praying for all of my people of, you know, of us being safe and not having to worry about these dangers. But I wanted to, I at the time, it was like, it was things that you wanted to do. And it, I actually wasn't worried about speaking up about the situation. That was never a problem. I just am a very, very private person, and I'm not the person that goes on social media and talks about all the issues that happen. Now, this is a situation, this is a issue in America that is something that needs to be spoken up for and continually. And at that time, I was just like, you know, I'm going to pray for these people. I'm going to do what I can on this end, but I wasn't just in the space of doing that. Now, other things that I was, that I could say was afraid to do, was doing things to stand up for, like, for example, kneeling, like Cap did around that time. I was like, you know what, I need to make sure I keep my job. And this is just me being honest. I was, you know, make sure I keep my job. I don't know how this is going to be with, you know, with the people that are the owners of my team or the NBA, whatever the case may be, because I was just trying to make it in the league. And now I guess it took the situation that happened, you know, with George Floyd and Ahmaud and Breonna Taylor, like, and maybe because we weren't playing basketball and having anything to take our minds and let our minds really and our eyes see exactly and really what's going on. And unfortunately, black people have lived with this all of our lives. We've been in a situation that we've experienced these things and seen it over and over and had this pain. But this time we were able to really, really sit there and not have anything take us away from that pain. And in this time of me sitting and having this time to do that, I was like, this is something I should be speaking up about. You know, you can't be the person that wants to be private anymore. At the end of the day, I believe God blessed me to play basketball for more again than putting the ball in the basket. And that's for me to use my voice and stand up for what is right. And, you know, for whatever reason, it took some time, but like, I'm in a space now. It's like, I can't change that. And this is just such a pivotal time for all of us African Americans to be able to stand up and unite. And as well as the people that treat us equally, the people that believe us and fight for us as well, not just black people. That's every colored person, white people, everyone. So this is our time to be able to do that and show, you know, the world again, that we want to be on the right side of history, and that's where I want to be.
Justin Holliday is joining us. Justin, let me ask you this. Now, you make the point that there's a misconception that if you criticize something, it means that you're ungrateful or you're unappreciative. What do you make of that argument?
So, you know, in writing this letter, and even in the sense of me thinking about not playing, I know a lot of people don't understand how you can possibly think about not playing basketball and getting paid millions of dollars to do so because of the situation and why I was struggling and trying to decide. And at the beginning of, you know, of my time of thinking if I wanted to play or not, I was, you know, thinking about the NBA is coming back to play, and I know that a lot of people want us to play so they can forget about this, or this can be a situation that happens. So in being saying I am criticizing, it's talking about, you know, the NBA coming back. But I will say at that time, I didn't know what the NBA was going to do to, you know, try to help, you know, with everything and the problems that we have going on in America. This is just the thoughts that were coming out of my head. And that's why it's obviously my open letter and what was happening with me. So I was like, okay, the NBA obviously wants us to come back and play and put the ball in the basket, you know, especially in the middle of a pandemic, which seems very, very tough to do. And also with all the injustice, social injustice and racial tension and problems that we have going on. And so I'm thinking like, dang, you know, they just want us to come back and play basketball and just kind of forget about this, and we're going to just make this money. And so that's what I mean by, just because I criticize it doesn't mean I'm not grateful. The only reason why I have this platform, the only reason why people want to listen to what I have to say, is because I play basketball. The only reason why I make the money I make is because I play basketball, and I'm thankful for that. So I wanted to make sure people understood that it's like, I'm not ungrateful for what I have in front of me. I understand what I have in front of me, but sometimes you have to make sacrifices and do certain things to stand up for what is right. And that's what I was trying to make sure I put out there. And to say this, the NBA is doing actually a lot of stuff to try to help with social injustice and, again, the racial issues that we do have. And I'm in talks with my team doing different things. So the thing is, they're in that area of us playing, but still doing things to make sure that this isn't forgotten. And that's just huge for us.
Justin Holliday is joining us. So when you think about making that trip down to Florida and living in the bubble, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I mean, the main thing for me, first and foremost, is just leaving my family. That's the hardest part. And again, a lot of people are going to ask, like, you know, why are you so worried about that? You've been home for 3 months, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm a family man. You know, I have a beautiful wife and two beautiful daughters. One is actually 3 months old, and I've been here every day since the day she was born. And I didn't have that with my first daughter. And obviously wish I did, but the only time, the longest amount of time we missed during the season, the regular season, is maybe 13 days at the most. So, you know, to be gone for 2 months before we can see him, or whatever the case may be, 2 months or more, months and a half or more, is something that's just hard to do. And I'm spending every day with my daughter, every single day with my two-year-old daughter, while my wife, you know, obviously has a newborn and breastfeeding and things like that. And I know it's going to be hard on me, but I know it's going to be really, really hard on her. She's a person, she calls me for. And so to leave that and just how it saddens me was really hard. And then obviously, you know, we just don't know what it's going to be like being in the bubble with, you know, our COVID situation we have going on in the world. And that's obviously a concern, and how, you know, we can stay healthy. I mean, everybody just wants to make sure they're healthy. And those are just things that we're worried about. But there is some things that, you know, going to play, like I said, we'll do, is it gives us a platform to be able to stand up and talk about the issues we have conversations. Do things that make change, help people and advocate for, you know, our people. And I also, I mean, thinking about my brothers, I'll be able to spend some time with my, you know, my other two brothers as well, which is good too. So like, I always try to find good in everything, but there are concerns with going down, and I'm sure everybody has some type of concern going down to play.
We're talking to Justin Holliday, breaking it all down. All of that makes sense to me. Now, a number of teams and players have been talking about the mental and psychological grind of living in the bubble for weeks on end. I mean, you point out the very obvious. You have to be away from your family. But then logistically, when you go into a bubble and you're going to be there for as long as you are, how are you preparing for that? Like, are you going to bring stuff to keep you entertained or to keep you from getting bored? How are you going to spend your time away from the floor when you're going to be stuck in a room?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do know that the NBA does have a lot of different activities and things set up down there for us to try to make it as enjoyable as possible. I do know that for sure. But me personally, again, I have my brothers there, so I'm going to try to spend as much time as I can with them. Obviously, Aaron being on my team, we always spend time, but, you know, we don't see Drew as much. So being able to do that would be good. But since I had my second daughter, I like to play the guitar. I taught myself, maybe it's 3 years now, how to play. And so I used to bring it on the road with me when I used to, you know, during the season. And so now I haven't touched it literally in the 3 months that we've been, you know, in quarantine and, you know, having my daughter. And so that's one thing that I would be putting a lot of my time, especially if when we have to be in the room, like the first 2 days when we have to quarantine, I'm going to just get back to playing the guitar and enjoy doing that. And then, you know, do other things I haven't been able to do since, you know, having my kids. I mean, I haven't been able to watch movies or TV and stuff like that like I usually do. So there's going to be things that I'm going to have and be able to do that's going to entertain me that might not entertain others because I haven't been able to do certain things in a while.
I get that. Justin Holliday joining me for a few more moments. I got to ask you about your brother since you mentioned it a couple of times. Now that you've established yourself, you're playing 25 minutes a night on a playoff team and to do it alongside your brother Aaron. What's it been like to play with him?
I mean, it's been great. I mean, period. You know, me and Aaron are 7 years apart, so I missed a lot of his basketball from high school to when he played in college because, you know, I went to college and then me and my journey trying to get to the NBA playing overseas, I missed a lot of his basketball. So for me to be able to be with him and seeing him play every day, like I don't miss a game. Don't miss a game, don't miss practice. We work out together. And also, you know, help him in his journey too because I've been where he is. As far as how he's thinking mentally, the worries that he has, the struggles that he will go through, I've done it all. And so I'm just thankful I'm able to be here and help him in that space, as well as, you know, to feed off of him and playing games with him. Because one thing that we are both and both feel the same, and I'm sure he agrees on, is we feel very, very comfortable playing with one another. And we know what the other person's going to do, and we know that the person's not going to let the team down. So being able to play with him has been great, man. And that's, you know, I can't, it's hard to put it all into words, because I know one day after we're done, it's going to really, really, really hit me. Like, you know, I got to play with, you know, Aaron on the playoff team, which is unreal.
It's incredible. I mean, you're right. There's no way you could appreciate that right now. That's an amazing thing, and especially when you consider the journey. And, Justin, for those who do not know or maybe don't remember, you were undrafted. You played in Belgium. You played in Hungary. You played in the D-League. How were you able to keep and maintain the faith and remain focused on the goal of the NBA that entire time when it had to have been really challenging?
Yeah, I mean, I believe God just put a fire in me to want to work for what I want. All those things, I used to call them failures, pretty much kept my fire burning really, really, really hot. And I'm the type of person that likes to prove people wrong, or I guess I could say prove myself right. And even though I didn't make it right away, I understood that life is a process, not just basketball, but life is a process. And if you think about that, that means that you're gonna be able and have a chance to get to where you want if you're putting the time in, if you're consistent doing something correctly, and you continue to believe. There's going to be times when things aren't going to go your way. That's life, period. No one's had a perfect life. No one's gotten everything they wanted. But people have been able. My mom taught me at a young age. So I was just able to continue to push forward and understand I can make it. And at the same time, I had Drew in the NBA. I worked out and lived with Drew all my life. So I knew I was good enough to play. And I just believe God, you know, made me to play basketball at the highest level, and, again, to be able to use my voice and use, you know, the type of platform that you get from playing basketball for speaking about what is right. And really all those situations I went through actually challenged my faith in the Lord. And I had to grow each time and make sure, I was in the Word and just learning. And I gained wisdom that way as far as my faith went. And again, now when I'm playing, it's so crazy thinking about the things I went through in the past and how I struggled with some things that now I would never struggle with because I've already been through it. So it's been how my life is supposed to be, and I'm smarter and stronger and wiser now because of it.
That's an amazing answer to me. Justin Holliday, my guest. Now, the thing is, Justin, last thing, and I say last thing because generally when I do this show and in this format, this interview you and I have done is already twice as long as any interview I generally do on the program because you're that good. Needless to say, I mean this sincerely. You have a point of view, so it does not surprise me in the very least that you have your own platform. You're one of the co-hosts of the Platform Basketball Podcast, and you've already had some great guests on your show, including Jamal Crawford, Clyde Drexler, Jamie Foxx, Tom Thibodeau, and more. How much fun are you having with that podcast?
It's actually a lot of fun, especially during the time when we weren't playing basketball, and all of our topics aren't about just basketball, but that's obviously everybody in the group comes from, and it's amazing. It's actually really cool to see, first time I get to talk about, being able to speak to like Clyde Drexler, like, a legend, to be able to talk to him about the game and just have a normal conversation. That's what I like about our platform is, like, we have real normal conversations to where, I was worried about starting at first because I didn't want to be, like, the reporter that's asking these questions. But it's like I'm literally get to ask them the questions that I've had for so long because I was a basketball player and I was a fan. So it's awesome to be able to talk and converse with them. And then for the younger generation to be able to learn and actually hear about the guys that they might have never seen play, hear about their experiences and playing against certain people. I think we kind of allow people to be able to, again, the younger kids to be able to talk, not talk, to hear us speak and hear those legends speak about the game. But then another thing that I think is pretty cool is how much the, like, celebrities we speak to love the game. Like Jamie Foxx, like how well he actually knows the game of basketball surprised me. Because we know he's a freaking legend in the music and movie industry and acting and doing all that type of stuff and comedy, but he knows the game and his experiences with Jordan and watching Michael Jordan play, his experience with watching Kobe play, like seeing things and like going to these games. Like, you remember when this happened? Well, this is actually what happened because I saw it, and this is actually what happened before that play. Like, to get to those stories is very interesting and exciting for me as being a part of it. That I enjoy really for myself. I'm glad other people get to hear and learn and do things like that. But for myself, it's been fun. And like one episode that I don't know if we've put out, I don't think we put out yet. We actually spoke to an NFL player. His name is Wale, and he talked about the financial side of sports and taking care of your money. And it was very, 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 a very powerful and
great interview that we had with him, because he talked about how important it was to save your money and what you can do and the things you need to start looking into now as a young athlete. And it was amazing. And so, you know, our platform is obviously basketball-based, but it's just pretty much helping people and kids to be able to come and watch some to figure out how they can be successful in sports or if anything you want to do in life. And I think our group is a very, very good group to be able to do so, because we're a whole bunch of guys that made it through hard work and getting to where we were. So.
Well, and not only that perspective and that point of view, but you're going to be a really good host as long as you maintain that same curiosity and that same interest. Like, I can hear it in your voice. You're pumped up talking about it. You're going to be interesting as long as you're interested. Listen, one, right. I promise, the last question. Michael Jordan, when you mentioned Jordan, what did you think watching that documentary and especially seeing him and Reggie Miller go at each other?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I thought about watching the documentary is, the first thing was Jordan was exactly who I thought he was. I grew up watching Jordan. My pops, had me watching. My favorite teams were the Bulls and the Lakers. And so I grew up watching Jordan. I grew up watching Kobe and Shaq. But Jordan was my favorite player of all time, and there was a reason why he was. Obviously, Jordan killed everyone. He was the best player to play. We know that. But there was something else that stuck out to me as well, and it was the work that he put in. And in this documentary, you got to see how serious he was about the game and how much work he put in to become who he was. Another thing that I liked a lot about watching it was seeing Michael Jordan have human moments, if that makes sense. He spoke about times that were pivotal for him in his career, like when he made that game-winning shot in North Carolina. Like, when I think about Jordan, we always think about Jordan as, you know, the closest thing to God, in a sense. Like Jordan not being from here, being godlike. And to hear him speak about things that way shows you that he is human as well, but it encourages you to, like, yes, there's a pivotal moment that helped Michael Jordan change to become this killer that he was on the court. That same thing can happen for you. You have pivotal moments that help you change. So really take those pivotal moments and use them to your advantage. I think Jordan did a great job at that. He spoke about that. And then I think it was a playoff game he was playing when the coach let him go and just score at the end of the game. And then obviously to see him play against Reggie and see that, first of all, I think a lot of people haven't given Reggie his credit for how good he was. And I know a lot of us, that watch the game know that, Reggie was great, but the hard thing was because Jordan was playing at the time, it's a lot of players that Jordan played against or played against Jordan that sometimes get their stuff kind of taken down. Like Reggie was great. How efficient he was when he was playing in the games is, like, I go back and look at this stuff, like, it's crazy. And, to see him battle, and obviously me playing for the Pacers and stuff, it'd just be dope to be in a situation to where, we're in the playoffs battling for, something that's huge. So, watching the Last Dance, man, I could talk about that all day, so I'm not going to keep us on here for a long time. But, again, it was just awesome for me to be able to watch and see a lot more of Jordan. And I think it was good for the younger generation to see, too, to know really who Jordan was inside and out. And let me say one more thing about Jordan that I thought was very, very, very important, and for children to actually think about that are playing basketball, younger guys. When you watch the documentary and when he talks about the coaches or when the coaches spoke, he sits there and he's looking the coaches in the eyes. Like, he respected the person that was the coach, regardless if he didn't agree with everything that they were speaking about. He respected them, and he went about the game at such a professional level that I thought – it showed that Jordan was great at every aspect of the game, and that was including how he was as a player and being the person that wasn't the coach. So that's all I have to say for it now.
That's great. He's a member of the Indiana Pacers. He is an NBA champion. He's the co-host of the Platform Basketball Podcast. I guarantee you, Justin, somebody, like, I think that you think that was pretty good, but I don't think you know how good that conversation was. Somebody's going to come to you and say, dude, man, Rome, he loves you. And you're going, yeah, okay. But it's going to be true. Like, that was such a good conversation.
Well, I appreciate
that,
man.
I'm so, so glad you and I came together and had that conversation. I didn't mean to keep you that long, but it was that interesting. Much respect, and I really do appreciate you, Justin. Thank you so much. That was
no
great.
Problem. Yeah, don't apologize. I thought I was keeping you long. So I thank you so much for, letting me come on and speak with you. And, hopefully we can speak again someday.
You never know with Silk, right? It's either Silk, fake Silk, or fake Silk. And yeah, I already know the fake Silk's better than the real Silk. Let's go to Huntington Beach. What's up, brah?
Hey,
Ladies and gentlemen, the official, unofficial mayor of Huntington Beach.
Thanks, Jen Silk. Good morning, clones. I've got a few important announcements to make today, then I'll let you get back to the Getaway Friday show. Due to recent events and because of the actions of a few people who participate on this show, I've had to take unilateral action. I want all of you listening to my voice to write this number down. It's 1-800-636-BRA. That's 1-800-636-2724. This is the new Jim Rome Show clone violations line, brah. Citizens and patriots can use this number to report the actions of clones that are detrimental to the show and place all of us in jeopardy. Now, you're probably wondering what would be a reportable offense, and I'm going to give you some examples. If you see an oiled-up clone in a Speedo doing a photo shoot with his, quote, wingman, you call the number. If you see a clone delivering sonnets to a fast food worker, you call and you give a full report. If a clone posts a video of himself crying on Twitter, you make us aware. If you happen to live in Las Vegas, you witness a clone buying golf shoes with lifts in them, file a report. Or if a clone periscopes 10 times per hour, often during the broadcast of the show, you let us know. And if you stumble upon a clone sleeping in a car with a cardboard stand-up of another man, you make the call. And if you find yourself in some godforsaken backwoods hellhole and you stumble upon a large group of clones playing golf without masks, getting hammered, and spreading COVIDs, do your civic duty and report them. And with that, let me address another pressing issue in the jungle, brah. That's the group of kooks known as the JTP. There is not a bigger group of miscreants, trolls, brain deads than these kooks. Allegedly, we have Homie and Noops to thank for this abomination, but I can't confirm that. I did do a bit of research on the Twitter bios of these kooks. Check out some of the ways these idiots describe themselves. These are what they actually put in their own bios. Number one, ATV enthusiast. Number two, action figure collector. Number three, jungle poker champ. Four, wingman for hire. Quote, I bring nothing to the table. My tweets are quantity over quality. That's one of my favorites. And probably the most damning, Mariners season ticket holder. These are the same kooks that regularly get their accounts suspended after a month and come back with some new pseudonym for themselves. Sarah T. and Kook and NoCal have been suspended more times than Josh Gordon. Most of these kooks have more aliases than Clinton Portis. I'm not even going to address the amount of burner accounts and Silk Bra tribute accounts. Those ones I actually like. So listen, if you witness any of these JTP clowns misbehaving online, you call the hotline. And clones, in closing, I'd just like to remind you that reporting kooks may make you feel uncomfortable, but it's time to be okay with being uncomfortable. Now, I'd like to invite all of you to get on at Silk Bra on Twitter, where I'll be hosting a town hall meeting to discuss the beach closings here in HB and enforcement of the 4th of July guidelines. Thank you and good morning.
Good job, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to hear if he was going to play any of his mayoral music on the way out. Good job, Mr. Mayor. Good
job. Baseball season's underway. But go ahead and slot the Cubs in last place. Because Quintana won't be able to play. He just effed his finger up today. They're singing, no, Cubs, no. Hey, Cubs, you blow. Jose Quintana, what do you say? Dishwashing is not your game. The Cubs are a joke. They may as well stay home. It wasn't Paul Olive or Cascade to blame for getting that thumb filleted. Go, Cubs, go. No, seriously, go. The season won't be going your way. The Cubs and Brewers own your ace. Hey, Chicago, that World Series was long ago. Your players take it out of their own way. You're irrelevant now. Go away.
Good night.